Welcome to the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we develop and deliver the most engaging negotiation content and training in the world. We host negotiation experts, business people, and entrepreneurs, and discuss what works, what doesn't work, and how we can improve our negotiation skills. Friends, welcome to this amazing throwback edition of the Negotiations Ninja podcast, where we throw back to a conversation that I had with Mr. Kwame Christian. He's an amazing negotiation trainer, attorney, author, and host of another incredible negotiation podcast called Negotiate Anything. He is a wonderful guy. I highly respect what he does. And today we talk all about conflict in negotiations, and more specifically, how do we get over conflict? How do we deal with conflict? You're going to love this conversation with him. Enjoy this amazing conversation with Mr. Kwame Christian. Kwame, how are you, my friend?
I am fantastic and quarantined. How are you?
I am also quarantined, but surprisingly positive. You know, it's nice to be closer to the family, nice to be closer to the kids. All of it is pretty good. So I'm like, you know, I can't complain. Life is good.
Good. Yeah, same here. The sun is shining in Columbus, and it looks like spring is starting to peek through. I'm just glad spring wasn't canceled. So, hey.
Everything else is getting canceled. Why not spring, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Hey, for the listeners who don't know a lot about you, man, can you fill them in on who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So my name's Kwame Christian. I'm the director of the American Negotiation Institute. And so I travel the country doing negotiation and conflict resolution trainings. So essentially, I'm the American version of Mark. I have a podcast called Negotiate Anything, where we have industry leaders come in and share their knowledge, just like Mark did over a year ago now. So we're overdue for you to come back on the show. And we also have sparring sessions where we have the guests come on and I try to become the embodiment of your worst fear. And we go toe-to-toe in a mock, unscripted negotiation. And then we do an ESPN-style breakdown afterwards so we can talk about what worked, what didn't work, and takeaways for the audience. So it's a lot of fun. Glad to be here and looking forward to this conversation.
Yeah, that sparring session is gold, man. You set me up the last time.
I know. And that was a perfect example because during the conversation, we said, oh, hey, this is the sparring session.
I love it, man. Hey, listen, though, you've come out with a new book. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's exciting. It's so the book is called Nobody Will Play With Me, which is probably the weirdest title for a negotiation book. But it's Nobody Will Play With Me, How to Find Confidence in Conflict. And what I realized is that a lot of times as negotiation experts, we're giving recipes to people who are afraid to get in the kitchen. It's not an issue of knowing the techniques and tactics or having the skills. Before we even have that, we need to overcome those personal fears, anxieties, those concerns that we have emotionally. So we have that foundation to actually have the difficult conversation. So even though I'm a practicing lawyer and mediator, my undergrad degree was in psychology. And so about 60 or 70% of the book is walking through the basics of psychology as it relates to difficult conversations so you can help to overcome those fears, the various fears and mindset issues that people have. And then we talk about the emotional barriers that you need to overcome with other people. And we give them a simple framework called compassionate curiosity that allows people to overcome those difficult conversations.
Love that, dude. Let's talk about the book for a second because I want to get into this. This is a very interesting topic for me. I find this a lot, and I know that you found this a lot in your training, is one of the biggest hangups that people have is just this fear that exists about taking that step and asking for more than they expect to get and all that kind of stuff. Where do you think that fear comes from?
It's a few different places, and it's different for everybody. For me, when I was taking the steps to overcome this personally, because this negotiation, difficult conversations in general, it didn't come natural for me. I'm a people pleaser. I call myself a recovering people pleaser. And so my fear was losing the relationship. And that explains the title of the book. because growing up as a Caribbean American in rural Ohio, being very different ethnically, racially, I've learned how to turn my accent on and off. But when I was younger, I had a very strong Caribbean accent, so I was different in many ways. And so I remember an incident on the playground where I would go to different friends in first grade, different people, nobody would play with me. Just the entire recess, nobody would play with me. And I went into the teacher crying. And so I remember making that vow to myself in first grade that this will never happen again. I will never feel like this again. And so I said, I went on a friendship offensive. Like, everybody's going to be my friend. People are going to like me. And it was great. It became really popular and well-liked. But the problem is, I wasn't willing to jeopardize the relationships that I worked so hard to have. And so whenever the specter of conflict came up, I would always shy away from it and just give up and give in, even if it was something that I cared about. So that was my personal barrier. And then other people have other fears. I know a lot of women talk about the social stigma that they face when they try to be assertive. If a man is assertive, it's looked at as a leadership skill. If a woman is assertive, it's looked at as, you know, I'll just say a personality flaw. I won't say the word that they usually use, right? And so we all have our own barriers. And so the book kind of walks people through how to go through this introspective process to figure out what their personal barrier is. And then we give some really practical and actionable techniques that they can use to overcome them.
I love that you used the very specific word that for me is telling. You said the specter of conflict. Why did you choose that word?
Because it's all about perception. It is all about perception, you know? And so we see it coming and we have this negative perception about what it is. We see the shadows, right? It's scary for us. And we know with the shadow, with shadows in general, the depending on the angle of the light, we can make something really small look really big, depending on the angle, depending on our perception. And so that's why I say that, because that's a major part of the mindset shift. We have to look at conflict completely differently. The root of it all for me is seeing conflict as an opportunity.
Fantastic, dude. I love that. Whenever we bring on someone like you who trains and delivers, you see so much, and people like us see so much in all the different teams that we're coaching and training, and we see all the different industries. There's some commonalities that exist when it comes to lack of planning, lack of strategy, all that kind of stuff. What do you see as probably the most important thing to do when it comes to planning or strategy for a negotiation that people are just missing?
Well, first, I think it's doing it. I mean, just taking the step to plan and strategize. Intuitively, we all know that planning and strategizing and preparation in general is powerful, but I don't think we understand just how powerful it is. I was reading a book on negotiation. It was one of the great courses that I was going through. And there was a study out of the Thunderbird School of Management in Chicago. And they did a laboratory study of, I think it was 250 or 230 mock negotiations. And so the control group was comprised of people who just read the prompt, did the negotiation. The experimental group was comprised of people who actually took the time to prepare. One of the people in the negotiation actually took the time to prepare before the negotiation. And then the differences were this. First of all, the people who took the time to prepare were able to create 11% more value for themselves, which is significant. I mean, could you imagine? It just, hey, boss, I'm going to get 10% better deals for us. Yeah, I don't know. I don't care how you're doing it. Go out and do that, right? And so we're not even talking about the acquisition of incredible high-level negotiation techniques. We're just talking about preparation. And then the other part of the study that was really fascinating was the fact that they were also able to create 6% more value for their counterpart during the negotiation as well. And so it's a situation where not only are you helping yourself to get more value, but because you're taking the time to prepare, you're able to be creative and create more value for the other person as well.
Why do you think people don't plan though? You know, I mean, we harp on this all the time, right? Like I know I've heard you on your show talk about this. I've heard you speak about it online in your videos. I've spoken about it. I feel like we speak about this to the nth degree, and yet we still see virtually no one that I come into contact with in my training, or at least in very small pockets. No one is planning. No one is preparing. No one is strategizing. What's the issue here? Do people just feel like it's just going to take too long, or what do you think the issue is?
Yeah, I think it's two things. The first one is busyness, and the next one is they don't know how to prepare. So with busyness, I think it's the same thing that prevents people from working out, meditating, making their bed, you know, meal prep, all of that stuff. We convince ourselves that we don't have the time. And since we don't prioritize it, we won't have the time. And so we have to be intentional about making space to do the preparation. Schedule it on your calendar. Treat it like a meeting and protect it the same way that we would a meeting. And then you will miraculously have the time to prepare. And then when it comes to not knowing how to do it, what I like to do is go through a systematic process of preparation. And so if you go to the website, AmericanNegotiationInstitute.com/guide, we have free negotiation guides that walk you through exactly what you need to do for your business negotiations. And when you download it, you'll get access to all of our guides. I think it's 18. So the business negotiation guide, conflict resolution, car negotiation, introvert negotiation guide, salary negotiation guide. It's an abundance of resources there for free. And the reason we do it is because it's the easiest way to improve your outcomes in negotiation. But a lot of people don't know how to do it. So we walk through it. You can systematically prepare. And then I think the most important thing that we have in the guide is we challenge you to create a list of 10 open-ended questions that you're going to have that you could potentially use during the conversation. Not a script, but just going through those questions, because I'm sure you know, I know you talk about it on the show all the time, asking questions is one of the most simple but most powerful persuasive tools at our disposal. And if you take a little bit of time and think through it, it'll become a lot more fluid during the conversation.
Yeah, I think what a lot of people have issues with is when they try it, right? Because it's new, that feels so uncomfortable. And so they just resort back to old habits and bad habits again. And so for the listeners, if you're listening to this right now, I really want to encourage you, when you do this, if you're not used to planning or preparing for your negotiations and you try it, it's going to feel weird. It's going to feel uncomfortable. You're going to get to a point, especially when you start planning your open-ended questions, you're going to get to a point where you're like, I can't come up with anything else. And you're going to think to yourself, oh, you know, I'm not ready for this. This is weird. I don't think this is the right way. These guys don't know what they're talking about. I promise you, the more that you practice it, the easier it's going to become. It's like any skill. Like if you're going to go and learn to play golf right now, you're not going to drive a 350-yard drive right away. It's going to take practice. It's going to take time. It's going to take all of that stuff that's involved in developing any new skill. And what Kwame is talking about is so, so critical, because without this planning, without this strategy, you're just not going to get better results. You're going to wing it, and you may get lucky here and there, but you're not going to get consistently good results. And if you want consistently good results, you have to plan, you have to strategize, you have to prepare. Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about another company that I run called Content Callout. It is a thought leadership brand marketing company. Now, what does that mean? It means that we take you as an executive or entrepreneur, a leader of a small or medium-sized business, and we turn you into a thought leader online. We take your personal brand and we amp it up to 11 so that you can lead with confidence, knowing that people will recognize you, recognize your brand, and recognize your business because of the thought leadership approach that you've taken on social media through content creation and content distribution, as well as engaging with all of your following online. How do you get involved in this? Easy, easy, easy. Just go to contentcallout.com/get-started, and you will see there three different options that will allow you to take your thought leadership brand for yourself and for your business to the next level. We are super excited to talk to you about this. We've seen some massive growth with the businesses that we've been working with. Very, very exciting time for us. Look at that. We appreciate it. Now back to your show. Kwame, further to that, One thing that I found for a lot of people to help them in their quest to become better negotiators is this idea of modeling themselves after other negotiators who may have gotten great results either in their work or outside of work, or maybe a business role model that they may have had. Do you model yourself after any one person or any group of people? Do you have a mentor that you look up to?
I do have mentors that I look up to, but regarding modeling, that can be a little bit dangerous. And it's funny you say that, because one of the free guides is a negotiation style guide. I think we call it Know Thyself. So you could create your own authentic negotiation style. So I'm working with LinkedIn to do a LinkedIn learning course all about the psychology of personality for leaders. And when you look at the psychology of personality, it's really interesting. Everybody's created equally, but we're all created differently. And the model that you have in your mind might be somebody that's very admirable, who does a great job as a negotiator, but their personality profile is different from yours. I know for me, I like tough guys. I really love watching mafia movies, you know, the old school Italian gangster. It's so cool. That's not me.
I can just hear you on the other end of a negotiation being like, I want 20% off, see? Give me the deal, see?
Right. It's just not who I am. And the thing is, what you should do is, like I said, go through that introspective process and figure out who it is you are and what you like, and then learn as many negotiation techniques and tactics and approaches as you can. And I call it a persuasive menu. So you'll be able to take some of this and say, oh, I could use that. I see how that could work. I struggle in executing it. It doesn't jive with me, but instead I'm going to do that. But then as you understand more about negotiation, you could say, even though I don't use this technique or approach, I can identify it when somebody else is using it on me. It's important to have mentors, and it's important to learn from people and see different approaches. And I think that's why your show and my show is so great, because we get people who have very different approaches and sometimes on key issues don't agree. But I think it's important to know all of those so you can figure out how to incorporate a personalized negotiation style in a way that is effective for you.
Love it, dude. Do you have a favorite negotiation author? Do you have a favorite book? You're not allowed to list your own.
Okay, good. I always feel obligated because I would list somebody else and then my PR person would say, Kwame, no, list yourself. It's hard not to say Chris Voss. Right now, his book is the most popular negotiation book on the market at this moment. And really, I think it's the most practical book right now. And so when I think about the practicality of it, when he was explaining the name of the book, Never Split the Difference, he said, listen, I come from a world where if there are 8 hostages, I can't say you take 4, I take 4, let's call it a day. I need to get 100% of what I want. I need you to like and trust me during the process. And at the end, you need to peacefully agree to go to jail. And what I find is that his approach is a lot more assertive than the ivory tower approach, but I think it's a lot more effective. Behind that, I would say Negotiation Genius by Deepak Malhotra and Max Bazerman. They're from the Harvard School of Business. And when I say Harvard School, for me, I think about it as the tree, the pedagogical tree that started with Roger Fisher and William Urey with Getting to Yes. And I think their approach is almost like an encyclopedic recitation of the best negotiation techniques. So I really appreciate it and enjoyed that book too. So if I'm ranking those two in terms of immediate practicality, I'd say Never Split the Difference. And then in terms of a really great overview of all negotiation techniques, I'd say Negotiation Genius.
Perfect. It's not all sunshine and rainbows though. And I think that's very clear in Chris Voss's book when he talks about his stuff. And yeah, I've had him on the show a couple of times and he talks about like the bad side of negotiation and when things go bad. I've had the privilege and the pleasure of having Gary Nesner on the show as well, who talked about the Waco crisis and where things went bad in that negotiation. Now, many of us won't ever be able to get to the level of those guys where they're negotiating at that kind of all or nothing, basically, type of negotiation and that kind of pressure. But for you, there must have been a time in your career where things didn't go well. Maybe you could share with the listeners a negotiation that didn't go well and what you learned from it.
Yeah, as a lawyer, it's really interesting. There are a few that come to mind, but I'll go with something that's a little bit more recent. I think the moral of the story as a lawyer is you can't pick your facts and you have to kind of play your position. And so I was representing a client who was in a business venture with another company, a joint venture, and things started to go sideways. And there were, I'm trying to figure out a way to say this in a confidential way. There were some issues that came out based on the relationship. And then there were some bad facts that came out on my client's side as well that I had to dance around. And it just showed me what it feels like again to have to play from behind. You know, you have to conduct yourself in a way that you are respectful to the other side. And you also, I don't want to say command respect, but you conduct yourself in a way that is respectful as well. But you also have to respect the power dynamic. Sometimes people just have more power than you. And if you don't show respect to the reality of the power dynamics, then the other side feels the need to impress upon you the reality of the situation. So it was a tough situation. And I think my client and I, we did the best that we could under the circumstances, but a deal just didn't come to the table. And now it's really the clock is ticking on litigation. But the reality was it reminded me of the fact that as trite as it sounds, you can't win them all. And sometimes in spite of your best effort, you can do everything the right way. You can prepare effectively and you can have really great conversations with the other side. The reality of the situation sometimes is that there's just no deal to be had and that's okay.
I think this is a super important point. I want to dwell on this for a little bit because I think a lot of people believe that there's a lot of negotiation trainers out there that'll say, you know, say these three things and you're guaranteed success. And unfortunately, that's just not true, right? Like there's going to be times where you plan and prepare and do as much as you can to plan and prepare, as you said, but then the deal just doesn't come to fruition, falls through. I liken it to poker in a lot of ways where you're dealing with a lot of unknowns. And you're dealing with a lot of gray area, and you've just got to be able to play the hand as best you can that you've been dealt. And sometimes you just don't have a winning hand.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. It goes from, okay, my goal is to win. Now let's reassess the situation after I receive new information. Okay, the goal is to not lose. Okay, wow, more information. Okay, now the goal is to lose less badly. Right? And you just have to adjust as the dynamics change. But see, I never played poker, but I'm obsessed with chess. I'm 13,000 games deep in chess. Chess.com. It's an addiction, really, more so than something to be admired at this point. But chess is all about positioning. And so what I always tell my clients is that you need to put yourself in the best position for success. You can't just say, I'm going to get a checkmate. Of course, we would love that. But in the process of working toward that, you need to make the moves that put you in the best position for success. And if you think about it in terms of with everything that you say, every conversation you have, your goal is to advance in the right direction, it makes the prospect of a difficult negotiation seem more manageable because you're saying, my goal is to just do the best I can right now. And then I'm going to reassess. And then I'm going to have another conversation. And I'm going to do the best I can at that time. And that's it. And it makes it a lot more manageable. And I think this cycles back really well to what we said at the beginning, the fear. We can't control the outcome of the negotiation. We can control how we perform during the process, which will then have an impact on the outcome. But we're not completely in control of the outcome. There are circumstances. There is another party that needs to agree. It's not within our control. And that's why I have a section in the book called The License to Fail. You need to focus on what it is that you can do. And if you don't achieve the success that you want, even though you did the best you can, that's okay. But you can't let that fear trick you into making poor strategic decisions along the way.
Dude, I feel like giving you like a black suit and a Bible and putting you on a soapbox in the middle of the street right now and just being in the crowd going, preach, preach. Because this is exactly what I'm talking about, man. This is what it all comes down to. You have the ability to control the controllables. You don't have the ability to control the uncontrollables. You don't have the ability to control the outcome. You can try as best you might, but at a certain time, you've got to recognize that there are external forces at play here. And yes, you can influence those external forces, and yes, you can do all you can, and certainly that's going to improve the probability of success. But there is never, ever a guarantee of success. I love that you said that. Man, I'm totally going to use flexing points in my next session. This is awesome.
I love it.
Okay, listen, one thing that I wanted to focus on for today's discussion was a little bit more around the book, around the psychological aspect of negotiation. We spoke briefly about, you know, where does this fear come from? What are some of the other psychological components that come into the discussion internally in your own brain when it comes to negotiation?
Ooh, so many to choose from, Mark. Where do I start? Well, let's go ahead and start with just talking about the different emotions that you can experience throughout the negotiation and the importance for you to acknowledge those emotions. So the framework that we talk about, the compassionate curiosity framework, is designed for simplicity, because during difficult conversations, especially when emotions are playing a role, we're not at our cognitive best, you know, so we're feeling emotional, our body is filled with the stress hormone cortisol, which clouds our thinking. So I wanted to make it as simple as possible so people can remember. And so the framework is, first, acknowledge and validate emotions. Second, get curious with compassion. And third, engage in joint problem solving. And so the design is, whenever you see somebody who is emotional, that is a signal to use the framework. And that's it. And you can use it at work and at home. It's a very flexible framework. And it's also designed not only for you to overcome the emotional challenges you see in others, but also the emotional challenges you have internally. And you use the exact same framework. Acknowledge and validate emotions, get curious with compassion, and engage in joint problem solving. So let's say, going into a conversation you've been avoiding for a while, you recognize, hey, I'm afraid of this. That's why I'm engaging in this avoidance. I'm afraid. So that's acknowledging the emotions. And so the magic behind acknowledging the emotions internally for yourself and externally for other people is that when you're feeling emotionally about a situation, your brain is using the amygdala. That's what's in action, right? That's the where your emotional center is. But we need to get to a point where our brain is using the frontal lobe, where that's where the highest level of thinking is. That's where logical reasoning is. Now, the magic behind this is that in order for you to effectively label an emotion for yourself, you have to think logically about it. To get very nerdy, it's the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, which is located in the frontal lobe. That's the specific part of the brain that's utilized in labeling emotions. So the simple act of labeling the emotion is what gets the process of logical thinking. And so if you're doing that for somebody else, you say, oh, it seems as though you're really frustrated right now. In order to either accept or reject it, they have to think logically about it. And so even if you're wrong, it still works. And so for you, you're acknowledging the fear that you're facing. And then you validate and say, this makes sense. This is an important conversation. That's all you're saying. It makes sense. And then you transition to the step of getting curious with compassion. So you ask yourself, why am I feeling this way? What led me to feel this way? And it's so important to do this with compassion, because we are often our own worst critics. And if we judge ourselves too harshly during this process, it makes it harder to emotionally recover, because not only do we feel bad, but we feel bad about feeling bad, which makes us feel worse. So you're digging deeper. This is the introspective process, figuring out what the root cause is. And then with joint problem solving, you might say, well, within my own mind, joint, who's the other person that I'm problem solving with? And so this is where you're trying to get your heart and mind on the same page. There's a reason you feel emotionally about this situation, right? And so those emotional needs need to be recognized and honored in whatever agreement you come to. And then also there's a substantive part of it as well that we need to address as well. So if you go through this process, then you can come up with some solutions that you know will be in accordance with your emotional and substantive needs. So then when you move into the actual conversation, you're at a position where you're thinking clearly, you've worked through those emotional barriers, and you have an idea of which solutions will get you what you need substantively without making you feel bad about it after the fact.
I love that you broke down like the amygdala and the prefrontal cortex. For the listeners, just so that you know, when Kwame's talking about the prefrontal cortex, that's the area where we basically focus on making decisions and we moderate social behavior and all that kind of stuff. It's what helps our cognitive behavior, so to speak. And the one thing that we try and practice a lot at Negotiations Ninja, and we try and make sure that all the listeners are aware of, is studies have shown that you can actually enhance prefrontal activation through practicing mindfulness. So prayer, meditation, breathing, all that kind of stuff, just being present. So when we say to you, the way that you can help your negotiation is to practice meditation, it's not because we're like hippy-dippy and all that kind of stuff, which we probably are, but it's because it actually has been proven to enhance prefrontal activation, which helps with your decision quality, which helps with your cognitive behavior, all the kind of stuff that Kwame is talking about. So when he's talking about this, recognize that he's talking about it from the perspective of, this is how the brain works. And if you can move from that lizard brain of like that emotional response to actually labeling the motion, now we get into the discussion about, okay, now we're actually thinking logically because we have to label something, which forces our brain into that moment. Kwame, this is amazing, dude. I want to wrap up here, but before we wrap up, what do you want the people to know? What's one piece of advice that you want to leave the listeners with when it comes to negotiation?
The main thing is just prepare. I mean, if there's one thing that we could leave people with, Mark, today, that helps people to immediately enhance their negotiation outcomes, prepare.
What a ridiculous concept.
Just 40 minutes of high-level stuff, and then he says, prepare? What in the world? But that's really it. That's really it. And so if you download those guides, it's an easy way to do it. So yeah, just prepare. Make your life a lot easier.
100% agree with you, dude. How can people find you online?
I almost said like Mark, but I'm trying to get on Mark's level here when it comes to LinkedIn, but I'm on LinkedIn. That's an easy way to connect with me. And yeah, just check out the podcast. I'm assuming people who listen to this podcast are podcast listeners in general. So check out the Negotiate Anything podcast. But yeah, LinkedIn, I would say, is the best way to connect with me, and we can become besties.
Awesome, dude. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. And thank you so much for teaching us some stuff about psychology and negotiation.
My pleasure. Thank you for the invite again.
Hey, friends. Thanks so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please share it with friends and colleagues so that they can benefit from it as well. If you find Negotiations Ninja Podcast worthy, please go on to iTunes and give us a cool rating with a nice review. We certainly appreciate every single one that we get because it helps us to understand who is listening, how they're listening, and what it is they like. If there's something that you would like me to discuss around negotiation, influence, or persuasion, give me a shout. You know how to reach me on social media, or you can get me on my website, which is www.negotiations.ninja.